Brand simplifies choice. It is the simplest to understand. People have too many choices and too little time. A byproduct of our over-messaged and over-connected culture is the proliferation of choice. Consider the toothpaste aisle alone. There are over 400 different types and brands of toothpaste to choose from. Some whiten, some are meant for sensitive teeth, some are dentist-approved, and some are even gluten-free and organic. Add in the thousands of choices for what type of toothbrush you're going to use to apply your toothpaste, and the simple act of brushing your teeth can become an overwhelming myriad of choice. If just brushing your teeth presents a person with an immense amount of choice, what about the rest of the marketplace? A powerful brand has the ability to stand out where it matters most, in the customer's mind. I know what you're thinking. That might be true, but our product is so unique, so different, we'll be the only one out there. I hate to say it, but that's probably not reality. If you are one of the very, very few marketers who are marketing something so unique and different that there is literally no basis for comparison, kudos to you. For the rest of us, we will face the challenge of oversaturated choice sooner rather than later. That's where the brand proves itself as the opposite of excess, prodigality, and bullshit. Why? Because the brand simplifies our choice. People, as emotional intuitive beings, base their buying decisions on trust. Trust is gained from the relationships developed between people and organizations, and that relationship is facilitated by your brand. Very simple. Brand does not equal bullshit. Brand equals relationship. To take it a step further, brand equals relationship equals trust equals value. If you can help the customer internalize the value of your product and create that powerful customer feeling that there is no replacement for your brand, then you are well on your way to building an amazing brand. In order to better understand branding, let's go back to the beginning of branding. The history of branding. The concept of branding has been around for hundreds of years and likely much longer. What it means to brand something has broadened quite a bit since the word first came into use. Despite the changes, each of the older kinds of branding is still in wide use today. The modern word brand is derived from the word brander, a word from ancient Norse meaning to burn. Around 950 AD, a brand referred to a burning piece of wood. By the 1300s, it was used primarily to describe a torch, essentially a burning piece of wood that was used as a tool. By the 1500s, the meaning had changed to refer to a mark burned on cattle to show ownership. Individual ranches would each have their own unique mark, so ownership could be determined if their animals were lost, stolen, or mixed in with animals from another ranch. Each brand had to be simple, unique, and easy to identify quickly. Essential traits that are still common to modern logos. The 1820s saw the rise of the mass production and shipment of trade goods, as products like ale and wine were produced in larger batches and wider distribution. Manufacturers began burning their mark onto crates and cases of goods to distinguish themselves from their competition. Over time, the brand evolved into a symbol of quality rather than ownership. Products that were perceived as having a high and consistent quality could command a higher price than their undistinguished alternatives. In 1870, it became possible to register a trademark to prevent competitors from creating confusingly similar products. Brands promised functional benefits, such as Coca-Cola's 1905 slogan, "Coca-Cola revives and sustains." Brands themselves were becoming more valuable than the actual product. The introduction of radio and television gave manufacturers new ways to create demand for their products. In 1928, Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, published a book called Propaganda. Bernays argued that by associating products with ideas, large numbers of people could be persuaded to change their behavior. The book was enormously popular, and advertising agencies on Madison Avenue took notice. By the 1960s, marketers were using mass media to associate brands with emotional benefits rather than functional ones. Advertisements showed how using a particular brand would make you more desirable, part of an exclusive club, or, as Coca-Cola promised in 1979 with Have a Coke and a Smile, just happier. By the 1980s, distribution channels reached around the globe, and consumers had more choices than ever. Companies began to focus on building brand recognition for themselves rather than focusing exclusively on their products and services. This allowed them to build brand loyalty that extended across product lines and gave their consumers a sense of belonging and personal meaning. In 1984, Apple Computer released their iconic 1984 television ad that showed users breaking free of rigid conformity by using Apple computers. The computer itself was almost an afterthought in this powerful ad. Branding became strategic and took off. Businesses began to focus on establishing long-term corporate identity rather than creating short ad campaigns. Advertising agencies grew into brand consultancies. Corporate branding extended to nonprofits, political groups, and even personal brands for celebrities. The rise of the internet and social media is driving the next stage in the evolution of branding. Unlike consumers of the past, internet-connected people of today aren't satisfied to merely consume. They want to participate. Social media brands like YouTube and Facebook rely on their users to help establish their value and how they are perceived by the public. Content sites like Amazon and Yelp depend on reviewers to provide their most persuasive content. Although internet-based companies give up some of the control of their brand image, the loyalty from an actively participating customer base is unparalleled. Viral marketing, search engine optimization, and outsourced delivery allow organizations to gain visibility and deliver products without spending millions on advertising and infrastructure. So today, it is possible to create a brand, have no physical presence, and have people around the world believe your brand is just as good, if not better, than the physical representation of that brand. Amazon versus Walmart. Think retail and the destruction that is occurring in that marketplace with online retailers beginning to decimate actual retail brands with physical stores. Food delivery service brands are becoming more important than the actual food. We are indeed entering an interesting era, and there is no better time to understand branding and to become a brand expert. The making of a brand expert. Are people born to be marketers? And do brand experts just rise from among the sea of marketers? Becoming an expert in anything does not just happen. It takes focus, purpose, and years of practice. Researchers and educators have studied exactly how some people become experts, and guess what? It doesn't happen overnight. 30 years ago, two Hungarian educators, Laszlo and Clara Polgár, decided to challenge the popular assumption that women just don't succeed in areas requiring spatial thinking, such as chess. They wanted to make a point about the power of education. The Polgárs homeschooled their three daughters, and as part of their education, the girls started playing chess with their parents at a very young age. Their systematic training and daily practice paid off. By 2000, all three daughters had been ranked in the top 10 female players in the world. The youngest, Judit, had become a grandmaster at age 15, breaking the previous record for the youngest person to earn that title, held by Bobby Fischer, by a month. Judit became one of the world's top players and has defeated almost all the best male players. It's not only assumptions about gender differences in expertise that have started to crumble. Back in 1985, Benjamin Bloom, a professor of education at the University of Chicago, published a landmark book titled Developing Talent in Young People, which examined the critical factors that contribute to talent. He took a deep retrospective look at the childhoods of 120 elite performers who had won international competitions or awards in fields ranging from music and the arts to mathematics and neurology. Surprisingly, Bloom's work found no early indicators that could have predicted the virtuoso's success. Subsequent research indicating that there is no correlation between IQ and expert performance in fields such as chess, music, sports, and medicine has borne out his findings. So what does correlate with success? One thing emerges very clearly from Bloom's work. All the superb performers he investigated had practiced intensively, had studied with devoted teachers, and had been supported enthusiastically by their families throughout their developing years. Later research building on Bloom's pioneering study revealed that the amount and quality of practice were key factors in the level of expertise people achieved. Consistently and overwhelmingly, the evidence showed that experts are always made, not born. These conclusions are based on rigorous research that looked at exceptional performance using scientific methods that are verifiable and reproducible. Most of these studies were compiled in the Cambridge Handbook of Expertise and Expert Performance, published by Cambridge University Press and edited by K. Anders Ericsson, one of the authors of this article. The 900-page-plus handbook includes contributions from more than 100 leading scientists who have studied expertise and top performance in a wide variety of domains, such as surgery, acting, chess, writing, computer programming, ballet, music, aviation, firefighting, and many others. In other words, a lot of smart people have studied expertise and concluded it can be learned. The journey to truly superior performance is neither for the faint of heart nor for the impatient. The development of genuine expertise requires struggle, sacrifice, honesty, and often painful self-assessment. There are no shortcuts. It will take you at least a decade to achieve expertise, and you will need to invest that time wisely. Here are 5 pieces of advice on how to potentially become a brand expert on purpose. 1. Acquire brand knowledge. When was the last time you read or listened to articles, studies, or even a book on branding, other than this book? How are you going to learn to cook if you don't get in the kitchen? Set up Google Alerts on branding. Read or listen to several books on branding. I'll provide you with a list later on in the book. Attend workshops on branding and maybe even take a branding class at a local university. 2. Engaging in deliberate practice. You are not going to become a brand expert if you don't practice the art of branding. Quite a bit of this practice should focus on tasks beyond your current level of competence and comfort. Do a brand analysis. Create a branding tree. Go to a workshop on branding and really participate. Put yourself out there. Don't try and fool people either. Let them know you are a marketer who wants to learn the art of branding. They will help you if you are authentic and don't try and bullshit them. 3. You will need a well-informed coach. Everyone needs a coach or mentor in their professional life. In this case, you need to find someone who can really help you understand what you don't know about branding, and this person needs to be a brand expert. Take the time to seek out this person, as there are not many of them in any marketplace who are truly experts. Look for people who have actually built or managed brands. 4. Be patient. It takes time. If you want to achieve top performance as a brand expert, you've got to forget the folklore about genius that makes many people think they cannot take a scientific approach to developing expertise. Experts are not born, they are made. It's going to take you between 5 and 7 years to become an expert who is really knowledgeable and good. And finally, 5, run with the pack. There is nothing like a pack mentality to learn even more and perhaps a bit faster. In my marketing career, I had an amazing mentor who taught me about branding. But what accelerated that learning was hanging out with other marketing professionals who are also learning the art of marketing and branding. It wasn't long before I'd surrounded myself with other people my age who were smarter than me, and we all shared points of view and knowledge we were learning. It might have been over beers or even a ball game, but I learned a lot from my peers who I respected. I got to practice via our conversations and fuel my learning about branding. crafting a brand promise. It's critical to every brand that they have an underlying promise that they are making to their customers. And if you are a great brand, the promise is never said or appears in any of the marketing communications. It is felt by the customer, who has internalized all the marketing messages and believes in your promise. Let me give you an example via Nike. Nike is meticulous about their marketing, their brand image, their endorsements of top athletes, etc. All to support their tagline of "Just Do It." But that only serves to deliver their unwritten promise, and that is, if you wear or use Nike products, you will have the opportunity to be a champion. That is what customers feel from Nike. It's how Nike has built a multi-billion dollar brand that can withstand the test of time and competitors. Here are some guidelines in building a brand promise. 1. Simple is better. It should be no longer than a simple sentence or two. A brand promise is not the same thing as a mission statement, which can often get convoluted with rambling sentences. An effective brand promise combines the catchiness of a tagline and reinforces it with the essence of the company's mission. However, it's not the tagline. Credibility is key. If the customer experience doesn't match the brand promise, the value of your brand is weakened. An example of a brand promise not living up to expectations comes from Ford Motor Company. During the 1980s, Ford's brand tagline was, "Quality is job one." However, owners of Ford's vehicles were not impressed as their vehicles routinely broke down. It got so bad that consumers gave Ford their own version of a brand promise. Ford, found on roadside broken. 2. Better is different. If your brand promise sounds similar to other brand promises, especially a competitor's, how can you distinguish yourself from the pack? You need to discover what makes your company unique and different from your competitors. This goes beyond the features and benefits of your product and straight to the soul of your company and the heart of your employees. 3. Has to be memorable. A brand promise should impact every decision your company makes. While a promise may not be as catchy as a tagline or slogan, it must be memorable enough for employees to embrace it and use it during customer interactions, and in turn, it is then internalized by the customers who just feel your brand has no easy substitute. And finally, 4. Inspire people. People, in general, will act when they feel an emotional connection to a person or a product or a company. An effective brand promise always helps establish that connection by being inspiring. At the same time, don't promise what you can't deliver. A brand promise is meant to inspire, but you also want to be realistic. A great example of an inspirational brand promise was Apple's Think Different campaign. It promised amazing hardware and software that would allow you to do your very best work. The core elements of a brand. If you are going to build a brand or even revitalize one, you need to be aware and understand the core elements that go into crafting a brand. Here are the core elements I look to create in a brand. 1. Brand identity. The brand, of course, is an easily recognizable name that immediately tells people about a certain organization that manufactures certain products or delivers certain services. Brand identity is the way people recognize the brand. It may be through the logo or other associated visuals. The Apple logo is very simple, but it is immediately recognizable worldwide. 2. Brand image. Brand image is the idea of the brand that people develop in their minds. It also dictates what they expect and don't expect from the brand. For instance, Mercedes has the image of a luxury car maker, so it cannot be building a budget car even if there was a large market for it. Its existing premium customers won't take to it kindly as it dilutes the current image. Actually, Mercedes has done just that, but not under their brand name. The Smart Car has its own brand and is not directly associated with Mercedes in the USA. It's hard and sometimes impossible to change a brand image, so it's best to know what you're aiming at before you invest hard-earned dollars. 3. Brand positioning. Positioning is the way a product is placed in the market and in the customer's mind. It basically defines what segments of the market the brand is targeting. For instance, Patagonia is a brand targeted at outdoor enthusiasts and experts. Basic ingredients in all outdoor gear might be similar, but this one has been positioned to attract its customers with its expert focus on design, functionality, and sustainability. Who doesn't want to wear Patagonia? 4. Brand personality. Brand personality is just like the personality of human beings. It is certain emotional and personal qualities that we associate with a particular brand. For example, we can associate youthfulness with Pepsi, or ruggedness with DeWalt tools. Every single element of the brand identity, including the color of the logo and the typography on the brand name, adds to the personality. 5. Brand equity. Brand equity is the value of a brand. It may include tangible financial value, such as market share and revenue, as well as intangible aspects, such as strategic benefits of the brand. For example, Apple is a major technology brand, and people perceive it as a premium, cutting-edge manufacturer of quality products. So, it is not only the sales, but the sheer image that takes the brand equity to a different level altogether. 6. Brand experience. Brand experience is a combination of everything that a customer goes through while purchasing and using that brand. For example, how does one feel while ordering food and eating at KFC? How does the staff behave, and how fast do they deliver the food, and of course, how did the food taste? Also, since it has many stores all over the world, customers expect all of them to maintain uniform standards of brand experience. 7. Brand differentiation. Differentiation, as the word suggests, is how a brand stands out in the crowd. For instance, Dell Computers lets people choose their components and assemble their own computer system, thus making it different from others who just sell ready-made computers at retail stores with no scope for customization. 8. Brand communication. Brand communication is the core message that is delivered through various media sources, like advertising, brochures, online marketing, trade shows, packaging, etc. If the brand has to grow, it must be able to clearly communicate its core benefits to its customers, consistently across all media. 9. Brand gap. Brand gap is the difference between what a brand promises to deliver in its communications and what it actually does. For its own sake, the gap should not be very large at all. A successful brand must be able to deliver what it promises. By the way, no amount of advertising or content marketing efforts can save a bad product or weak service. And finally, 10, brand extension. Brand extension is basically the idea of going beyond one's original products and services and exploring newer fields. For example, Google started as a search engine, but now it provides many other services, including email, AdWords advertising, and a mobile operating system called Android. This is how it has extended the brand, but it must be done in a manner so that the existing brand equity complements the newer initiatives. Google's great brand equity was acquired through its stellar search operations, and this is what enabled it to develop other services related to its core brand. If creating a brand today takes expertise, knowledge of the marketplace, understanding the competition and the customers, what happens when you accelerate everything? Markets are being created or disrupted so quickly today that it is very challenging for marketers. With this increased speed, you do need to act or react, but how you do it, not how fast you do it, is what will determine if you overcome the challenges facing you and your brand. Brand Insight. This brand was first created in 1888. Yes, 1888. They were pioneers with their technology, which involved the early creation of photographic cameras that were inexpensive. Over the years, they became experts on the innovation of film and even sophisticated X-ray technology. Then in the early 1990s, they actually invented the ability to take a digital photograph. Their products and technology were utilized in virtually every camera in the marketplace. While they were certainly market leaders in photo technology, they completely misread the photography marketplace as digital photos exploded, first with digital cameras, and obviously now with smartphones. The world did not stop taking photos. The amount of photos taken in the world keeps increasing, especially with the rise of social media. Somehow this multi-billion dollar brand missed all of that, and so Kodak, the brand which once owned the very thought of photography, went away. Key takeaway. Customers do not want to take film-based analog photos anymore. They want to take digital photographs. Kodak should have adapted and become a version of Flickr, or better yet, have embraced digital photography as a medium and created or bought Instagram or even Snapchat. The world is constantly changing, and relevant brands need to adapt in order to survive. If customers don't feel you anymore, you will go away. Chapter 3. The Challenge of Branding Today. The challenge of branding today is that it is very easy for someone to create a logo. As a matter of fact, almost anyone can create a logo. There are online crowd-based websites where, from $5 to $99, designers from all over the world will create a logo. And then some executive or marketer from that company will slap that logo on the website and launch the company. However, that does not even come close to creating a brand. What is the brand meaning behind the logo? What does it begin to stand for in the marketplace? How is the product or service differentiation reflected in the brand? And how do we want the customer to feel? You can't create a logo for a company and think that you are creating a brand. You need to do your homework, understand the marketplace and trends, understand your competition, and most important, understand your potential customers. Customers are not always right, but they are never wrong. I have met thousands of customers in my career, and you know what? I never get tired of meeting them, and neither should you. Today, my customers are college students who are taking my creativity and entrepreneurship courses and participating in the Lavin Entrepreneurship Center programs. I get constant feedback through interactions in the classroom and through student surveys. The survey feedback has both quantitative scores and qualitative comments. I read everything. I look for little ahas, those comments that point toward ways to improve my courses. Just when I think I have created the world's best entrepreneurship course, a student comment will let me know that I have yards to go. Even though we know we really need it, sometimes customer truth is hard to accept, and yet this truth yields incredible customer insights. Customer truth is the heart of understanding exactly what kind of brand to create. There is a logical reason for this. As a marketer, your biggest ally is your customer. If you connect with your customers and keep your brand promise, those customers will help you with your marketing. They will write solid reviews. Via word of mouth, they will tell others about your product or service. But ignore them, and you do so at your peril. A great brand strategy that's poorly executed with customers is in real trouble, especially if those customers have the option to buy a similar type of product or service from your competitors. A service company I consulted with recently was revisiting its brand and marketing strategy. I asked the employees to name a company they admired for its customer service, but that they had never met an employee of that company. They were puzzled for a few minutes. Then one person said, "Amazon." I asked why. The person said, "They keep their promise." The rest of the employees in the room murmured their agreement. In your lifetime, you may not ever meet an Amazon employee face to face. So why is this brand so successful? Because they never stop responding to their customers' needs. In 1996, when Jeff Bezos asked our agency to handle all of Amazon's initial branding and marketing, We spent months trying to figure out how to differentiate this brand from its competitors. We didn't even work on any creative elements for the first 3 months. Instead, we focused on the customers, on their expectations, and what would delight them. Our agency team was stalled in some initial brainstorming, so we asked ourselves, who delights us with service? After some discussion, we all agreed it was boutique, hotel, concierges. So we went out in Portland and Seattle and visited them. We saw how these concierges remembered and greeted people who came back repeatedly to stay with them, how they provided reviews and recommendations for local restaurants, how they retrieved newspapers for guests, how they asked people if they enjoyed their stay. This concierge mentality was designed into the Amazon experience that you still see today based on a branding strategy created in 1996. And if the branding is done well, it could be timeless. Seek customer truth so that you discover how to delight your customers. Marketplace creation and disruption. In the world we live in today, everything seems to be moving so fast. Products and services seem to be falling from the sky. Maybe one day they will. It used to be that marketplaces formed over longer periods of time. Not anymore. Uber was not here yesterday, but it's here today. And that company creation spawned a number of companies moving into and growing that marketplace. Is it a product or brand race? Time will tell, but the good news is that if you are a marketer, you can take advantage of marketplaces that used to be difficult or expensive to enter. You just need to notice a customer trend shifting in the marketplace and create a brand to meet a new or expanding need. I could buy pet food at the store, or I could have it delivered by a new brand to the house via a subscription model. Same $24 billion industry. Tremendous opportunities for marketers to architect new brands and create or disrupt large marketplaces. But you have to really understand the marketplace and know what kind of brand will capture your potential customers' hearts. I network with quite a few online marketers, so I get to hear lots of interesting ideas. These marketers are pitching me all the time about brands they want to create, launch, or even to discuss the brand they work at today. For a brand strategy to work, you need to have identified the initial niche segment of your target market that would care about your product or service. And honestly, the marketplace itself should hopefully be potentially large. I'm a big fan of large, emerging, or disrupted marketplaces. The notion that marketers just need to come up with new ideas to drive the marketing for a successful company may work sometimes, but I've learned that it's the marketplace that matters most. You can have an amazing brand or market strategy, but if there is no clear market opportunity, it might just as well be worthless. Remember, big marketplace, big opportunity. So, when you think of a potentially great product or service, or perhaps a solution to a current problem, put that idea into an existing marketplace, and then ask yourself some simple questions. 1. Is this a large marketplace? 2. Is the market easily defined? 3. Can I reach people in the marketplace easily? 4. Is the market growing? 5. Is the marketplace being disrupted? 6. Is the marketplace fragmented? 7. Who are the competitors? 8. Who is the top competitor? 9. What frustrates customers? 10. What are customers valuing? 11. Are customers' needs changing? And finally, 12. What brand strategy allows me to be the leader? You really can't put together a brand or marketing strategy on any product or service unless you understand the marketplace and its potential customers. The more you examine that potential marketplace, the more likely you will then spot something that you can really investigate. Just remember, if you have a large opportunity, going back to the beginning of the chapter, creating a logo or doing some tactical digital marketing does not create a brand. Don't make these 10 digital marketing mistakes. In the age of marketing, digital marketing is still relatively new and emerging. However, companies in many industries recognize the importance and impact of this new media on their brands. From smartphones to social media, digital marketing has become an integral element in the way consumers operate day to day. And for many new brands, it is the way the customer interacts with the brand. Yet, while all companies currently reside at different levels of how they integrate digital marketing into their brand efforts, all run the risk of committing the very faux pas that may hinder future progress and success. Let's look at the 10 most common digital marketing mistakes that brands and marketers make today, while also offering advice on how companies, and especially marketers, can modify their perspective as they work to realign their mindset with respect to digital marketing and branding. 1. Traditional marketing and digital marketing teams frequently operate as two separate entities. Just as entire organizations cannot function properly with siloed departments in place, marketing teams cannot succeed if traditional and digital channels remain divided. Thus, these disparate teams act cautiously, degrading innovation and advanced strategies, as neither group wants to run the risk of losing budget to the more effective channel. What to do? Break down silos to develop an informed cross-channel branding strategy. If companies truly want to run integrated cross-channel campaigns, they must create an organizational structure that supports that very philosophy. Ultimately, such integrated teams can leverage historical data captured by traditional means over the years to guide digital programs and initiatives, while also leveraging digital to test new approaches and programs before investing in traditional media. 2. Companies often attempt to rush progress via digital marketing because they can move faster, inevitably implementing the wrong technology and creating confusion. Many brands lack vision, planning, and commitment when they first enact their digital marketing strategies. Thus, marketers rush to choose a product or technology via marketing that may not be able to solve the important problems at hand. Implementing the incorrect marketing strategy at the start may inevitably warrant another partnership or product to manage in the future, leading teams to underperform. What to do? Establish goals, develop plans, and research available technologies prior to adoption. Before companies can verify the proper technology, they must establish goals and develop plans that will guide their journey forward. However, jumping on the slick new product bandwagon may become costly. Therefore, once KPIs, that is, critical performance indicators, have been determined, marketers must thoroughly research the available marketing platforms and tools in the market to ensure that the solution is the right fit for their needs, will integrate with existing platforms, and can scale with their growing needs. 3. Digital marketers implement programs simply because they can. Though counterintuitive, many digital marketers implement programs that lack purpose and diminish trust. For instance, marketers will create loyalty programs despite the fact that they provide no loyalty incentives whatsoever. They look to collect customer data, but they fail to offer any rewards or tailored engagements in return. What to do? Make sure all initiatives drive value and support trust. Poorly planned and unsupported initiatives may drive customers to the competition, as they detract from the ability to truly engage and convert consumers and actually hurt the brand. Thus, digital marketers must refrain from running to the latest tools because focusing on fewer initiatives that deliver value will positively impact trust more than any scattered strategy in the marketplace. 4. Brands produce content for the sake of having content, rather than offer relevant messaging that speaks to customers' specific interests. Most brands believe the ability to post and share content across channels means they must produce an effortless flow of information. Marketers understand that customer interactions take place across all touchpoints, leading them to believe that they must provide a constant stream of content no matter the platform, for they believe that visibility will result in engagement when, in reality, the strategy typically diminishes interest, and again, could hurt the brand. What to do? Post engaging content that demonstrates the importance of quality over quantity. Because content has clearly become an integral element of the digital marketing experience, companies must approach this trend carefully, as other brands have also hopped on the bandwagon. Instead of focusing on quantity, marketers must focus on the quality of their content. Engaging material has the power to strengthen customer loyalty and advocacy, while mediocre content will likely have the opposite effect. 5. Marketers think they can and should monitor and measure every customer interaction point possible. Though marketers now have the ability to gather, analyze, and act upon data across the customer lifecycle, many will find that the power of digital can also hinder progress. Most marketers find themselves drowning in a sea of unnecessary data because they insist on tracking everything imaginable. Ultimately, however, not all customer information and behavioral data can be brought to action, nor should it be. What to do? Take one step at a time to determine which touchpoints and metrics truly impact the bottom line. Marketers must develop a better balance by a constant testing and strategy reconfiguration. Not every touchpoint will yield information that pertains to the brand's bottom line, and these relevant touchpoints are likely to change as the customer experience evolves. Sometimes, less is more. 6. Marketers dream of a multi-channel strategy, but fail to centralize the incoming digital data. For years, marketers have romanticized the notion of a multi-channel experience. Yet, while many talk about breaking down the departmental silos that stall progress, few have successfully implemented this unifying approach to customer experience and data collection, as companies typically lack a cohesive organizational structure, as well as the technological infrastructure to bring all incoming information together under one roof. What to do? Integrate customer information to understand the customer experience and drive strategic development. Ultimately, data centralization will be the primary component standing between success and failure. Companies that neglect to integrate disparate systems are destined to struggle, hindering customer experience. When it comes to data centralization, organizations must invest in the integrated technologies that enable marketers to be more efficient and effective with regard to actionable decision-making. Ideally, companies will have such a marketing infrastructure in place from the start, as those who fail to implement such systems are destined to fight an uphill battle against resource decisions, siloed information, and enterprise-wide inefficiencies. Unfortunately, however, such is the case for many on the journey toward digital proficiency, as few brands currently have the ability to blend incoming data across the entire organization. 7. Marketers, especially digital marketers, rarely look to consumer behavior for guidance, ultimately failing to uphold the brand promise. Despite the fact that consumer behavior ultimately drives brand success or failure, many marketers neglect to tap into said actions to derive insight from this incoming data. These companies rush to implement the latest digital strategy because it's the newest trend. But seeking solutions from this business-first standpoint signals the wrong approach, as marketers disregard their own customers' needs, desires, bad experiences, and demands for brand engagement. What to do? Put the customer in the center of your marketing strategy to boost trust and deliver ROI, return on investment. By organizing campaigns that build upon customer insight, brands can easily strengthen trust in order to cultivate the types of relationships necessary for continued success. Ultimately, digital campaigns can't succeed based on big data and analytics alone. Instead, marketers must consider clear and actionable customer insights. Delivering the perfectly tailored message to the intended target remains at the core of every marketer's mission. However, digital marketing will always be secondary to an actual relationship. This is why companies must maintain a real, humanistic approach to their marketing and branding efforts. 8. Executives invest in the necessary marketing technology, but not the resources that drive success. While most leaders now agree that digital channels require specific attention, many invest time and money into integrating the proper systems, yet few invest in the necessary resources. Companies often thrust management responsibilities on their already tapped-out workforces, setting the initiative up for failure from the onset. What to do? Create teams that specifically care for and carry out the brand's digital strategy. Technology isn't going to operate itself. Instead, strategic development must also include finding the right person or team of people with the necessary skill set and bandwidth to make the investment worthwhile. Ultimately, brands must recognize that technology cannot replace employees, for the customer experience will always require the human touch. 9. Brands neglect to establish one brand manager to monitor metrics and goals. Because companies often implement marketing initiatives with great speed, many use this bias for action as an excuse for not taking the time to develop comprehensive plans and well-defined campaigns with specific objectives. Thus, employees begin operating within their siloed departments without one brand manager to oversee and manage the results of the marketing campaigns. What is the goal? Brand awareness, leads, or sales? What to do? Understand how each digital asset performs and its contribution to the end goal. By putting one brand manager in the position to supervise all marketing activity, companies will ultimately come to understand the role of each digital asset with regard to how they individually and collectively impact the broader campaign. Thus, brands can easily create one comprehensive snapshot of the campaign and demonstrate how each asset contributes to the end goal, so the brand manager may effectively shift budget dollars to maximize marketing campaign performance. And finally, 10. Marketing teams lack the company-wide buy-in needed to advance digital strategy development. As with every company initiative, digital marketing requires top-down buy-in if said strategies hope to succeed. Implementation isn't something that can be turned on or off by flipping the switch. Marketers need continued support so they can take slow but steady steps toward success. What to do? Gain executive buy-in and build partner relationships to enable a unified marketing strategy. True commitment must be supported from the top, or else investments in technology, partnerships, infrastructure, and resources will likely lack the fortitude to sustain long-term success. Thus, marketers must establish a clear set of strategic goals and develop a plan with launch milestones and success measurements to ensure all levels of the company are in the loop regarding progress. Developing partnerships with best-in-class providers will also enable marketers to integrate solutions for scalability and expansion. With said relationships in place, companies will be well on their way to establishing a unified marketing strategy that values and benefits the entire organization. In the end, the customer experience must be at the heart of every digital marketing initiative, for customers will inevitably feel the impact of both failed and successful strategies. It's not about the latest digital marketing technology. It's about the customer and how they feel about the brand. Marketers must proceed with caution as the customer relationship remains delicate, particularly in this connected age when the competition is only one click away. Move first or follow fast. As a marketer, you need to understand the brand challenge of either launching a product or service, taking market share, or disrupting a marketplace. Why? because there are so many unknowns. Are you early to the marketplace? Are you late? Where is the marketplace going? Who will be my future competitor? When we did the branding and marketing for Amazon, there were other booksellers already online. Who were they? Who knows or cares now? We reasoned that we were slightly early to the e-commerce marketplace, so we decided to create a powerful brand and position Amazon as a leader. Next, we talked to potential customers, created differentiation via having access to a million book titles, allowed customers to post reviews, one-click remembering you, and so on. We also had the right amount of marketing dollars and founder support to not only create awareness, but to build the brand position. Amazon.com, Earth's biggest bookstore. That, in turn, drove sales. Lots of sales. It's awesome if you are the first to move into a market and can take a dominant position. But the competition is always lurking, so you better move fast and build defensive brand positions. For example, a unique formula, a critical partnership, patents, etc. And it's still no guarantee that being first will win out. In fact, this is rarely true. Over time, 47% of first movers fail, compared with only 8% of fast followers. As the phrase goes, you can recognize a marketplace pioneer from the arrows in the company's back. First mover advantage isn't automatically bestowed unto the first product in a category. It's not even guaranteed to exist in your industry, and when it does, it is fought for and earned. It's first winner, not first mover. Being first to the market means precisely nothing. Being the first to enter a market brings opportunities which, when exploited, can turn into advantages. First mover advantages have a shelf life and must be replaced with long-term differentiators. And you better demonstrate those differences in a way which means something to your customers and empowers your brand. The tactic here is to refine the user experience of the product or service such that it appeals to more than just early adopters. You need to move into early mass customers and then the mass market to succeed. This is what Apple did when they watched Sihan, Diamond Rio, Hango, Creative Nomad, Cohen, and Arcos all launch increasingly more advanced MP3 players to a slow-to-adopt customer. Rather than getting caught in this mess, Apple waited until the technology was sufficiently advanced and the market was sufficiently matured before launching a product with the best brand experience, the iPod. So, if being the first to enter a market is not absolutely critical, think Uber, then Lyft, what is, then? Some of you might have already guessed. More important than entering the market first is to enter the market before someone becomes a dominant brand, and then better understand the customer needs, innovate, and evolve your product or service to become the dominant brand in the industry. Contrary to what most people think, King Gillette was not the first to market safety razors. They were invented in 1880 by the Kampfer brothers, and a decade before King Gillette opened his company, there were already commercial safety razors being sold. Gillette, however, evolved the product rapidly, both by improving the design and by creating a business model where the profits would be made with the disposable blades. Neatly crafted business strategy, good understanding of customer needs, and great marketing enabled Gillette to dominate the safety razor market for such a long period of time. And they were not the first to the market. Now they have to deal with a brand disruptor, Dollar Shave Club. Another challenge you have as marketers has nothing to do with existing companies. It has to do with large customer groups who are changing their needs. Brands, boomers, and millennials. While I go into more depth with these two large customer groups in Chapter 10, I will briefly review the challenges of branding to baby boomers, aged 56 through 85, and millennials, aged 18 through 35. Just in the USA, boomers number about 71 million and declining, you could say dying, and about 76 million millennials, 81 million by 2025. Currently, there are about 2 billion millennials worldwide. These two customer segments are incredibly important to marketers. Why? It's not just the sheer numbers. It's the amount of current wealth the boomers have and the amazing wealth the millennials will inherit. So you better understand what's important to each segment from a branding perspective. Here are some things to keep in mind when targeting either of these two groups with your marketing and branding. Baby boomers. They hold massive amounts of wealth. They are living longer. They are more active. They don't want to move into retirement homes, and they are actually using technology, albeit as late adopters. Millennials. They love technology. They don't have enough money, or maybe even desire, to buy a house in suburbia. They live in downtown or in lifestyle areas, love to travel, socialize via social media, and will care more about social issues and the environment. If you don't know enough about them or don't have key insights to these two groups, you better read and learn more about them, especially on a global level. Keep your eye on these two groups as they will make and break brands. Better yet, understand the benefits you need to build into your brand in order to be successful. Brand insight. This $11 billion entertainment industry could not get out of its own way when renegade companies and customers started to decimate its sales by getting its products through other channels, albeit illegally. Industry leaders and executives of major brands argued for over 3 years about how to solve the problem. One person seemed to understand the problem, and his company had the brand permission from its customer base to launch a new sub-brand called iTunes. iTunes created the first legal music store online, made buying music online fashionable with its silhouette campaign, leveled the playing field for independent artists and labels, created the simple single price, and helped to slow the erosion of all-out piracy. You can argue the long-term effect of singles pricing, but it definitely jump-started the legal sale of music online. And it didn't hurt iPod sales either. Regardless of how it turns out, now that we have streaming music, Apple leveraged its brand equity and really made the first powerful step of becoming a consumer goods company and not just a computer company. They evolved their brand before the competition forced their hand. Key takeaway. Your brand needs to evolve to stay relevant as your customers change. If you build a powerful brand that customers love, they will give you permission to introduce a new product or service that they believe you have the capability and the wherewithal to fulfill their needs. That is what we call an amazing brand.
Thank you for listening to this episode of our podcast. We'll be really thankful if you support us by clicking the link in the description so that we continue to create amazing content for you.